Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to the Caffeination Podcast, the high-tech world of tunes and tech, coffee, and all things caffeine. This is episode number 204. Hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got going for you today. I think you are. I think it's going to be a great time. I hope everybody likes this. All right. So we have a couple things that we're going to try and get up and over here. First off the bat is we're not going to actually hear any PodSafe music today. In its place, you're going to hear the very first interview I've ever conducted for the Caffeination Podcast. I've always wanted to do it, had never really had the chance, never really had a topic that I felt I could tackle for the podcast that, you know, would not only bring value to everybody who's listening, but, you know, a couple other things as well. So hopefully you're going to, you know, enjoy that. We have a bunch of great information. Unfortunately, this is a day late, dollar short here on the Caffeination Podcast. After doing so well for so long, coming out on time, under budget, the whole nine yards. Yeah, this is actually being recorded on Monday evening as opposed to Sunday, in case you're listening to this well in the future. So this is being recorded for the 4th of February, 2008, as opposed to the 3rd, as it was supposed to be. 3rd being the Super Bowl. Yeah, you might think that would be the reason why we're recording today. No, in fact, that wouldn't be. We were going to record last night, but the Caffeination website, if, in case you're listening to this over the stream at the Tech Podcast Network or anywhere else, that would be www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. Yeah, that was down for about 5.5 hours yesterday because I figured, you know what, I'm home, I have a little bit of time to kill. I'm going to try and make this hosting change from my current hosting provider over to the new hosting provider, GoDaddy. So when I moved over to the new hosting provider, everything on the website promptly broke. So I got to do a little work on that. Got to figure out exactly what went wrong there and make the move again. So you are listening to this episode. If you're listening to it within the first week or so, hopefully I'll have it fixed by then. But you are listening to it on the same place you've always gotten it. Nothing's going to change for you. There's going to be a minor blip, and then all of a sudden, you're going to be on a new host. There's no issues at all to you. Been nothing but issues for me. So hopefully you can tell my voice is much better than it has been over the past, I'd say, 3 or 4 shows here. So I'm feeling good, feeling energized, and just, you know, wanted to run down the standard couple things I wanted to talk to you about. You know, of course, the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Find all the other member shows over Find all of the other member shows who have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content over at techpodcasts.com. Getting a little bit ahead of myself. I'm really psyched about some of the stuff we're going to be talking about today. I'm really kind of, you know, on the ball. I feel good. You know, I'm recording early. I'm well caffeinated. My voice is back to where I can modulate as I see fit. There were certain registers, certain areas in which I would like to take my voice normally. You know, like even just in standard conversation, certain sounds you'd like to make, it just didn't feel right, and I always felt like my voice was on the edge of cracking the past couple shows, in the past, I'd say, about a week and a half. So now just a little bit congested, everything's feeling good, so I feel, you know what, I can tackle this episode. And, you know, this episode's, or not just this episode, but the Caffeination Podcast is also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's blueberry.com without the E's. And, of course, the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, you can head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. All right, let's see exactly what we got going for you today. Here on today's show, you're going to be hearing about any and all of the following little topics: hosting, interviews, the mobile, Spectrums, Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, David Bowie, and Ben Heck. Now, if you don't know who all these people are, you don't know what all these things are, don't worry, we're going to be tackling them all in kind. But first up, first and foremost, rather, we would like to thank our sponsor here for the Caffeination Podcast. If you're looking for a way to present or collaborate during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple: web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your calls, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com and your computer screen shows up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or demos, training, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want for as long as you need with one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime without ever having to step foot outside your office. You not only end up saving time, but a serious amount of money as well. See for yourself, try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. We'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination. They help us, you know, attend events like the Philadelphia Social Media Breakfast with Jeff Pulver and friends. There's something wrong with calling. Jeff got corrected. Apparently, there's something wrong with calling it a social media breakfast. So it was Breakfast with Jeff Pulver and friends in Philadelphia who just all happened to meet through social media. So if you want to find out more about that little event, the shindig and all that other stuff, you can either go on over to facebook.com. You could search for the Caffeination Podcast, the group for that, or you could search for the Philadelphia Social Media Breakfast, I think. Or you could just search for Jeff Pulver and find that. There's a whole bunch of fun photos and stuff that were taken over there, some of them by me, and there's been tagging aplenty. Real-time social tagging was actually employed at the event, and I got to tell you, it was unbelievable. I really didn't know what exactly to make of it when we all got there, so I figured I might want to break it down a little bit and explain exactly what that means. Real-time social tagging is actually, you know, you walk in, you have your standard name tag, and then you have a little blurb about yourself. So, for instance, my blurb was, "It's hard to stay this caffeinated." And I was there in kind of a dual role. I was representing both myself and my podcast, and I was also representing Temple University in the social media space. We're doing a lot of fun stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go there. I'm going to represent both of them. I'm going to, you know, I figure, you know, my life as it is all jumbled up. There's all different times in which, you know, I'm called upon to talk about Temple or I'm called upon to talk about the caffeination. So, you know, I am who I am. At one point in time, I actually wrote an email to Guy Kawasaki and got a response relatively quickly. I said, you know, it was over my LinkedIn profile. I said, I keep trying to keep everything separate because, you know, I want to do it the right way. You know, you don't. The basic rule of thumb is you don't do your side job business in work. And then, you know, I still keep to that. You know, you don't do stuff for that on company time because that's what you're being paid to do. You're being paid to do your day job. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't crossing some line there. And at the same point in time, you know, I wanted people to be able to recognize the different things that I'm doing in my life. So I said, you know, should I include, you know, the Caffeination Podcast, you know, my Puzzle Piece Productions company, should I include those on my LinkedIn profile? Because my LinkedIn profile has a lot of information about Temple as well. And he said, well, you are but one person. You can't separate them in real life. So as long as you keep the duties separate, there shouldn't be a problem with it. So I was like, you know what? I understand that. And I'm going to kind of take that, internalize it a little bit. And I'm going to keep going onward. So that's kind of the way I'm attacking this here. But you know, it was a fantastic event to follow and a fantastic event to attend. So my tagline, obviously, like I said, was, it's hard to stay this caffeinated. And there were fun other taglines abounding, and you can find some of them on the photo groups and stuff like that. But as you entered into conversations with people, people would write out little tags on tiny little sticky notes and put them on your lapel. And so that way, like, I should have just pulled mine out. Mine had espresso yourself, a whole bunch of different caffeine-related ones. Had the Puzzler because of Puzzle Piece Productions. And I tagged people with things like Idea Man for Oliver Pritcher because the man looked at my business card for Puzzle Piece Productions, which happens to have a puzzle piece on it. He said, what I should do is actually perforate it so that when you get the business card, if you want to, you can pull the puzzle piece apart from the card. I was like, that's a fantastic idea. So I branded him the Idea Man. And it just kept going. And it was really a way to start conversations. It was really a fun, interesting event. So, you know, if Jeff's coming to your town, you really owe it to yourself to actually attend one of these. Even if you're not a podcaster, not a blogger, not in social media at all. There were people who were just fans of social media, who were just, you know, Twitter users who went there, you know, just to network. They're like, oh, do you have a business card? No, I don't. I just enjoy talking to people, you know, meeting people, exchanging stories. So I thought, you know, man, that's awesome. So this is going to be a little bit of a rambling episode at times. So hopefully you're going to be able to keep up, follow through. But another one of the people I met, fantastic individual, Podcast Steve on Twitter, is actually Steve Lubetkin of ProfessionalPodcasts.com. And he did a awesome culmination kind of style episode over at his blog, which is Lubetkin's other blog, blogspot.com. You can actually check it out at professionalpodcasts.com, or you can just check the link over at our show. And he interviewed me, and I'm about right before the halfway point of his episode. It's a 17-minute episode. You really owe it to yourself if you're curious about exactly what was happening and the different things that were going on at the breakfast. You know, they have Jeff Pulver explaining exactly what a social media breakfast is all about, exactly, you know, what real-time social tagging and like the real meat and potatoes of what the event was about. And I hope you can tell I'm still juiced about it. I still think it was a fantastic idea, and I hope to be able to take some of the contacts and some of the ideas that I gained just from talking there, either, you know, both with people who were dealing with podcasting in an educational sense, you know, for my day job and for, you know, the Caffeination podcast and other things. You know, it was just such a great whirlwind of information that I'm still processing everything. So it was fantastic. So he did a fantastic wrap-up little episode there that has all the different interviews and everything. And his interviews are what I aspire to. They're concise. They're very clear audio. And, you know, so I have never done an interview. So I didn't have an opportunity to actually, you know, either... Well, I've been interviewed before. Little-known fact, when I was in high school, I was actually the representative for the students in Philadelphia on the school board. So basically, I represented 218,000 other kids on the Philadelphia Public School Board. I was elected to the position, and I had my own TV show for a year. Go figure, you know? Dealt a lot with budget issues and different things that were affecting the students on whole. So I've been interviewed, I've talked to people like that, but I've never had the opportunity to be on the other side and do the interviewing. And I got that opportunity here, and this is in a new section that we're going to talk to you a little bit about. This is called the Real News Bites section at the Caffeination. Now, this is just the real things that are either making headlines or I think really need to be focused in on. So I'm just it's going to come right before Tech Cruft, and it's going to come and go. And I just want to kind of separate it out. You know, realize that these things are very important in the way that the world works in new media and elsewhere. And hopefully, you're going to be able to internalize them a little bit and take something out of them. Now, the first little thing I want to kind of give you a lead up to what this is. Now, there's been a topic where a couple people have asked me to speak on it previously, and that's the current wireless spectrum auction going on in the FCC and what exactly that meant and everything. So I, unfortunately, am completely inept when it comes to discussing what that means, what the money being discussed was all about, and I didn't even know the different dollar amounts, and, you know, some of them were incredibly insane. So one of the people that I met at the social media breakfast was actually Chris Parandian from MobileDiner.com, and he lives, eats, and breathes mobile information. So the man is, you know, has worked with, you know, really, really high up companies. He's a font of so much information that he can't even explain it all. There's stuff that he was not able to talk to me about, and that's perfectly fine. But at the same point in time, I wanted to ask him if there was just a little bit of general information he'd be able to pass on to the listeners of the Caffeination podcast, and by proxy, everybody else, to explain about, you know, just the generalization of the current FCC auction. So here is my first interview with Chris Parandian from MobileDiner.com. And just, you know, apologies in advance for the sound. It clipped a little bit at the beginning. And, of course, I forgot the windscreen to the microphone I was using. So, you know, you live and you learn. And if you like this kind of thing, if you like these little interviews, I'm going to be doing a couple more of them. I have a couple other people that I'd like to talk to. So just let me know if you enjoy this. Please, caffeination@gmail.com. And just let me know, you know, what you'd liked, what you didn't like. Would you like me to edit them shorter? So, again, here's Chris Parandian from MobileDiner.com and me from the Social Media Breakfast. So here you go.
Here at the Philadelphia Social Media Breakfast with Chris Parandian, and he's going to explain a little bit of something that I've been hesitant to try and talk about now. It's exactly what the wireless spectrum auction is and what the valuations are that we've been hearing about. So, Chris?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me, Paul. Chris Parandian with MobileDiner.com. Good morning to everybody. Absolutely, there's a... The hot spot right now these days is at the FCC, and as some of you know, the FCC is holding an auction on licenses that were formerly, or some are currently, held by the broadcasting industry. As they move and rechannel to go digital, there will be spectrum available for the wireless industry to purchase in an auction. And they will be able to utilize that spectrum to do, you know, to do more, accomplish more things than they can currently with their spectrum holdings. The spectrum can promulgate walls. It's very, very valuable. So this is a big coveted auction. There are players like Google that are participating, new players. So we expect to see, the auction's playing out now as we speak.
The only other question I had was, with the reserve prices that the FCC has set, what happens after they meet the reserve?
Sure. Well, as we were talking a little bit offline, the Congress set a number so that the Federal Treasury would the proceeds from the spectrum auction go to the Treasury. And the FCC commissioner had some different ideas in terms of what he would like to see companies utilize that spectrum for. So he wanted to cover himself, and he put reserve prices on the spectrum so as to meet the congressional threshold that Congress put in the DTV law. And so different slices of the spectrum carry reserve prices. So for example, in one instance, in the upper 700 spectrum band, the FCC commissioner wanted a commercial licensee to partner up with public safety, and they would have to have a network sharing agreement. That spectrum, it's the D block, is currently set for a reserve price of $1.3 billion. We currently aren't seeing that right now. In the event that that threshold is not reached, the FCC will have to re-auction that spectrum. It's going to be exciting to watch. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and I'll keep in touch with you offline, let you know what happens with this, okay?
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Okay, again, that was Chris Barandium from the mobilediner.com, and hopefully that, you know, kind of shed a little bit more light on exactly what's going on right now. Everybody's talking all about the, this block and that block, and I was unsure exactly what it is. Basically, the entire 700 megahertz spectrum has been broken up, and there's four different sections, and each one is supposed to be used for different things. So it kind of really made sense once I got the information from the source, you know, exactly, you know, what they were saying, you know, by the reserve prices and everything like that. So, you know, I'm really enthused at how the interview turned out content-wise, you know, the technology behind it. Maybe, I know I have a lot of work to do, so maybe find a way to minimize the background noise while not cutting off and, pin the meter there a couple times, and it's just it's frustrating as a media producer here to have that kind of thing happen. It was really a bush league on my part to forget the windscreen and a couple other things, but hopefully, you know, I'll only get better from here on. I'd like to thank Chris. I mean, that was a fantastic little summation of exactly what's happening right now, so hopefully you all enjoyed that, and please feel free to, you know, send me comments and feedback. If you'd like to find Chris's blog, you can either head on over to mobilediner.com yourself, or you can just check out the link over at the Caffeination Podcast. All right, and then the other really big, really, really huge news is that Microsoft has made an unsolicited bid for Yahoo. Yes, that's correct. For somewhere in the neighborhood of $44.9 billion. It's an insane amount, and apparently it's less than they offered before because Yahoo's in dire straits right now. And there's a couple different stories that are out there right now, and exactly what this would mean, you know, for the players that are out there. Apparently Yahoo, I was unaware of this, but is a major, major sponsor of a lot of open source projects. So, Microsoft buys Yahoo, you can pretty much be assured that that kind of stuff's going to dry up. So if that's one of the things you're interested in, if you're interested in a project that, is sponsored by Yahoo, then you might want to start looking around for elsewhere to live, because, I mean, Microsoft's not necessarily the biggest fan for open source, so it's just something I wanted to kind of make you aware of. And then the other thing, what Microsoft's trying to do is, Microsoft has a little bit of a Google obsession, Google has a little bit of a Microsoft obsession. Basically, they both have envy. You know, Microsoft would love to have the search market that Google has. Google, on the other hand, is the up-and-coming, you know, player in the game, and everybody really, right now, is kind of, fascinated by Google. They think it's doing fantastic things, much like, you know, Microsoft was in the early 80s and, you know, even late 80s. Up until they started getting too big, and then people start worrying about them. It's kind of funny because, you know, at one point in time over the past year, I think it was at CES, you know, Bill Gates basically said to the guys who were running Google, said, you know, there was a point in time where we were loved, and it was because we were doing new and exciting things. We haven't stopped, at least in our eyes, doing new and exciting things. We're just now so ubiquitous. We're now just so big that everybody's kind of worried about us. So he says, you are rapidly approaching that point, so you might want to wise up. And it kind of, you know, kind of interesting. And now it's starting to come to fruition just a little bit, because you have Google calling the Yahoo and Microsoft merger bad for the future of the internet. And you have to wonder about the reason behind it. Is it actually because it would be bad? I mean, we don't know that. You know, as small consumers, do we really know? You know, well, personally, I'm against the big mergers that are out there. I've been a Yahoo customer since like 1996 or 1997. I don't even know. I've had a Yahoo, my current Yahoo email address, which is just used to access Flickr and a couple other small things right now, has been around since like 97, 98. So it's been, you know, I've had the Yahoo address for a long time. For a while there, they were my portal of choice. Currently, it's Google. So it's, and, you know, I used to use Hotmail before Microsoft bought them. So I've seen what they do to online email clients, and that would be horrible for Yahoo. That much I can tell you. So it's just, I'm also not a huge fan of this kind of change. I think the players, you know, for the most part, need to either be broken up or stay the same, because it's nothing has ever been proven to come good of a merger of two giants. You know, so, I mean, hey if you disagree with me, please feel free to write in, but still, at the same point in time, you know, I don't understand how this would help the people who are using the internet. So I might agree with Google, but at the same point in time, you know that they have other reasoning behind it. So if number two and number three on the charts and search terms and everything like that join up, then they're going to make a real big push towards number one. So you got to take everything with a grain of salt. But I definitely wanted to kind of put it out there, and it's going to be funny. You know, they're probably just going to be Yahoo, a division of Microsoft, or just Microsoft. It's very rare that online services seem to be completely absorbed by others. Like, for instance, when AT&T and Singular, you know, merged in any one of their number of configurations, they completely changed the name over. I still call it Singular. It's AT&T, the lowercase AT&T, because it's the friendlier, nicer, softer side of AT&T, whatever. But at the same point in time, you know, when Google bought YouTube, they didn't rebrand it. You know, it's still YouTube. Everybody knows YouTube. There's people who don't even know that they merged, other than now it says a Google company under it. So you gotta wonder, is it gonna be Yahoo, a Microsoft company, or is it gonna be something like Microhoo? You know, Microsoft has a very strong brand name. They're not gonna just give that up. So, all right, moving right along now into our tech cruft section. I was unaware of this, but apparently David Bowie, completely off the track here, but apparently David Bowie has like a small portable synthesizer that he uses to write songs and create music, and it's called a stylophone. So basically it takes a metal stylus and it touches metal leads and creates different music, kind of like a piano, but on a much smaller scale. So there's a link on Engadget on how to make your own stylophone. So I thought that was an awesome project, and it looks really crazy, really kind of old school and old world. So at the same point in time, you know, I was looking at it going, you know, that'd be fantastic as a piece on how to do. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to put it up there. Hopefully, you know, somebody will find it interesting. I know there's a couple people who listen, specifically my friend Tim, who would love this, just because it's his kind of thing. And at the same point in time, there's stuff that is just out of this world about that kind of thing. And, you know, it's really neat to take a technology like that and, you know, make it your own. And, you know, like, if you were to head out there and make your own little stylophone, it would be your own creation. It would be something that you put together, cobbled together of different parts, and it has a little bit of yourself in it. And then you take it and you go one step further, which is the next little thing we have to talk about. And this one is called a Kawasilitator? I don't even know. It's a music synthesizer that you cannot create. This thing is entirely in a touchpad. Now, we're not talking like a drum pad or a beat pad or anything like this. This is, you know, an all-in-one, very inclusive, tiny unit from Korg that is insane in the amount of stuff that you can do. This is an entire synthesizer in one tiny little, you know, touchpad thing. So, I mean, I know that there's music and online content creators out there that are just, like, unbelievably taken with different synthesizers, sound, and everything like this. This thing's only $200 for the amount of sound that it can produce. I just thought it was kind of cool, so I thought I'd throw it out there. Let's see what else we got up here. Oh yeah, another little bit of real world news, but not necessarily as crazy as the other stuff, is the fourth undersea cable recently has been taken offline in less than a week. Now, in case you were unaware, there are great huge beasts of cables heading under and crisscrossing the world everywhere. You know, the transatlantic cable, the first cable laid from Newfoundland over to the British Isles way back in the I think it was the 1920s or 19 or you know not, uh, the 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 either the teens or the 20s is when the first one, and they sent the telegraph signal through the wire, through the solid core copper wire coated with gutta percha instead of rubber, you know, all the way, you know, from one coast to the other. They sent, you know, the signals back and forth. You know, that's one thing, and that, from what I understand, that's actually still in existence. But there are massive snakes of fiber optic cable that just go from, you know, one landmass to another. And this has been the fourth time in less than a week that one of these cables has been damaged. I mean, it's not that, you know, they are incredibly and particularly vulnerable. I mean, there's not a lot of them, because I'm pretty sure you can understand the cost in laying one of these from one point to another. So it's insane. It was... The cable was actually, this one's taken offline due to power issues. So basically there was problems on one end or another, and the cable shut down. So there was like blackouts of chunk. But there are different issues that have happened. Like recently, the first one that we saw this was that the internet was completely cut off for different people in the Middle East because a cable crossing the Mediterranean had an anchor from a ship drag across it and sever it. So, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, we live in the global world. Yes, but we are held together by tenuous threads. These tiny, you know, by and large, when you consider, you know, the thing's probably like a foot in diameter, it's still tiny when you compare it to some of the other, you know, cabling and some of the other connections that are out there. You know, the conduit coming out of the Hoover Dam is something like a foot and a half in diameter, and different kinds of copper and everything all layered in together. So, I mean... these cables are the link that sends us from one continent to the other. So if you're listening to this in the Mediterranean, if you're listening to this in Germany, Russia, China, you know, this has traveled undersea somehow to get to you, unless you're on some kind of cool satellite uplink, in which case, you know, cheers to you. You're spending a crap load of money to get some information. But at the same point in time, it's like, you know, it's really, I don't know, humbling in a data sense that to think that, you know, the connection between one place and another is that tenuous, you know? I mean, when you live within one landmass, for instance, if I'm trying to send data to another city in the United States, I'm pretty much assured that the data will get there regardless of the situation of cabling. You know, that's the way that the internet is supposed to be. And it works very well on one solid landmass, you know? It's an interlocking web of connections. It's not just a bunch of tubes. It's not something you can just take a truck and dump something on. It's this very interconnected, very, you know, woven fiber network. There are massive trunks that do carry everything. But at the same point in time, you know, when you're going from one continent to the other... The level of interconnectivity isn't nearly as dense as, you know, just say from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. I mean, literally, it's very much a humbling thing to think about. So just wanted to kind of put that out there, and I thought it was really interesting, thought it was very pertinent, so you wanted to pass it along. All right, next little article we have up here is the evolution of the Wiimote. This one's an article from over at device.com. It's not necessarily the Wiimote, but it's the next place I see, and it's actually what I think the Wiimote should have been and what I thought it was. If you've ever held a Wiimote in your hand, it's very easy to use, it's very interesting to play around with, but at the same point in time, it lacks certain understanding of ergonomics. While it sits in your hand very well, it does not lend itself to some of the actions that they're asking you to do with it. Like, it does lend itself to being sort of like a pseudo-baton at times, and it can be arranged in different fashions and everything like that, but, you know, the motion sensing isn't really what it should be, you know what I mean? It doesn't, you know, like... I don't know, it's very sensitive at some times, but at other times it seems to lack the information. So there's apparently a new generation of mobile device that's being put out, and this one's called the Darwin controller, and it's actually made like the pommel of a sword, which is fantastic. It's designed correctly to fit into the palm of your hand to be used correctly, and it has, instead of, you know, the infrared sensors and everything else like that, it has gyroscopes and accelerometers, which is what I thought was actually in the Wiimote. I thought there was something in there that could tell how fast. No. What it's doing is it's actually taking like little sonar pings of where your Wiimote is in reference to the console. So it, you know, it pings once and your arm's straight up. It pings another time, your arm's straight out. It can only tell by the distance between the two pings, the relative location of where the thing is. With an accelerometer in it, it can tell you how fast it got there. With a gyroscope in there, it can tell you which way it's tilting. You know, without the funkiness of trying to, you know, get that in, glean that information through the infrared and the Bluetooth and everything. So I think it's really interesting that there's no word yet on what console that this is actually going on. And in fact, it doesn't even know. I can't tell whether or not, but it might end up working with the Wii. It might end up working with a couple other things. So it's just interesting. So I'm not really sure. So it apparently you're supposed to hold it like you would a samurai sword, which I'm a very avid fan of the sword arts. You know, I've practiced kendo. I've practiced some minor level fencing. So I like the idea of being able to hold something like a sword. It just has a very natural feeling. So just kind of cool. Yeah, all right, moving right along. This is, if you don't know who Ben Heck is, you really need to kind of internalize it. Kind of like the gentleman we talked about last time with the crazy Wiimote tricks. You know, it's kind of like that, but it's with something different. This man, Ben Heck, lives, eats, and breathes modifying consoles, and not just modifying them, but doing it in such a beautiful way, such a complete and utterly insane way that you have to wonder why no corporation has kind of approached him and say, look, we realize that our console design sucks. We would like you to explain how we can fix it. Not saying, you know, that, you know, the console design that's out there is bad or anything, you know, but some of it just seems to be less than inspired, you know? So basically his project this time was he took an Xbox 360 and turned it into a laptop. Oh, an Xbox 360 Elite, by the way, and turned it into a laptop. Yes, that's correct. You know, he's commissioned to do these things, so he's probably making hand over fist in cash, but the thing he always does is he always includes how it happens. You know, he always does the step through, and you're sitting there watching him, and you're absolutely in awe of the level of understanding the man has, not of just of electronics and of spatial requirements for different things, but the level of understanding that he has for craftsmanship. And it's just one of those things that when you look at it, you have to realize that not only did the final product is smaller than the Xbox 360, apparently. It looks smaller than the one, you know, at least width-wise. So when it's closed, when it opens up, it actually has a high-definition LCD. It has a keyboard. It, you know, the only thing that doesn't fit in this little... Oh, and it also has an Xbox 360, the camera in there. So as opposed to the MacBooks and all the other stuff where the camera's above the actual screen, this one's actually below it, and it still has the little ring for focus and everything there. So everything that you would want in an Xbox is in this thing. It's insane. And the only thing that doesn't fit in this is the controllers, and they're off to the side, and they're you know, stock. So he didn't touch them at all. But, I mean, I don't know what else to say. You just need to head on over there. It has, the screen has native resolution of, you know, 1280 by 720, so it does allow native 720p HD viewing. So if you don't understand what that is, basically, it makes really pretty pictures very easily. So there's no other way that, to explain this, except you have to see it. And it's just a level of craftsmanship that I have not seen anywhere else. So, all right, now the next little thing we have up here, this thing's making its rounds. I kind of wanted to do a little bit of demystifying it for you, since I work at Temple. I work heavily in the printing area. I work heavily with the wide format and the, not necessarily high volume, but just people have the very interesting ideas about what exactly goes into printing a document. For instance, when you tell somebody that Kinko's charges somewhere around $30 for a 24x36 document, they're like, well, yeah, it's just a big printer. Yeah, it is just a big printer, but there's a level of complexity, there's a level of quality that you can't get from a standard inkjet printer and what they're doing. That's why it costs so much. So, you know, there's a story making its rounds on the internet right now. It's called the Canon... Too Much Printer is one of the things that's called. Basically, there's a Canon image system. It's called the ImagePress C7000 VP. Costs $280,000. It is a massive, huge printer. It's not just a printer, it's a printing system. That's what you need to step back and understand. This thing takes up roughly 30 4 feet of wall space. So from one end to the other thing, this thing's like the width of a... I don't even know. This thing's like the width of a four-lane highway here. Is it four-lane? Yeah, nah, maybe it's two-lane. I don't even know. So it's like 34 feet here. This thing is insane in the amount of space it takes up. And the thing is that it has to be one straight shot. You can't just arrange it differently. This isn't like, you know, printer origami. The way these things work together and you know, help each other out, you know, they need to be in a line. This is an assembly line. This is not just a printer. A printer is any one of the tiny little components within it, maybe. It has a, you know, a massive computer that's in there to obviously manage the print jobs that are happening there. And basically what people are saying, you know, I could never imagine spending almost $300,000 on a printer. Okay, I understand that, but this isn't just a printer. This is a binding station. So this would be like for a small-scale bookmaking firm could use this to make books from one end to the other. This thing has enough capacity for printers to hold 10,000 sheets of paper. So this is a very small-run printing press. You know, this is like a document imaging center that would create like pamphlets for conferences and stuff like that. This is like beyond Kinko's, like two steps beyond what Kinko's can do. Kinko's can make you know, all your fancy little booklets relatively quickly. This could have them before you're finished giving your order. I mean, that's the kind of level you're talking about here. This is 70 pages per minute at 1200 DPI. That, you know, to kind of break it down into layman's terms, the screen that you're looking at right now, if you're sitting on your computer, is at 72 DPI. That's 72 dots per inch on the screen. That's the resolution. That's how sharp the images are and everything. A standard printed work that you would get in a magazine is anywhere from 300 at the low end to 600 DPI. Dots per inch, again, it's amount of, like, dots of ink per inch on the printed work. The resolution that they're talking about is like professional photo quality, 1200 DPI. That's insane. That's awesome. And I would love to be able to see some of the products that come out of this thing. But at the same point in time, I kind of wanted to demystify it because I had a couple of people talk to me about it. They're like, oh yeah, did you see this computer? Did you see this printing system or this printer? It's 300 grand. I was looking at it. I was like, it's not one printer. So we'll just kind of put it out there, get a little bit of information flowing. Hopefully you find that interesting. If not, you know, I'm sorry. We're moving right along to the caffeine and food section here. In case you're new to this, if you're listening to this episode over the stream at the Tech Podcast Network, then this is the Caffeination Podcast, the high-octane world tunes of tech, coffee, and all things caffeine. Basically, what we do is we take caffeine culture, we take my love of coffee, caffeine, and we use it to fuel a podcast that's all about technology, news, information, little tips and tricks to help you make your day go better. Just fun little things that I find online and serious information, you know, with my own personal slant on it, and hopefully you find it all interesting. If you're looking for it, it's found over at www.caffination.com. That's caffeination.com, funnily enough. And if you'd like to send me comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to throw my direction, then you can do so at caffeination@gmail.com. All right, now let's see what else we got here in the caffeine and food section. A little bit light on this one, but just kind of wanted to put it out there. A website that I contribute to sometimes and love reading. It's basically a monthly newsletter, but it's slightly different. It's called ineedcoffee.com. And I've actually had people accuse me of owning the domain name. Trust me, it's not me. It's a fine gentleman by the name of Michael Allen Smith. And he wrote an article this past month. It's called No Coffee or Tea for Almost at Least 2 Weeks. Now, I love showing you here on the Caffeination when I make mistakes. And there's something that I'm actually going to be writing an article for on the this coming week about how to damn near kill yourself and why you shouldn't do it. Basically, I made a coffee filter out of available paper towels and work and tried to make coffee with it. Now, it would have been a great photo piece that I was originally going to, you know, put up for the Caffeination Podcast, and ineedcoffee.com is going to submit it to them because that's the kind of cool thing that they would like. Unfortunately, the swill that came out of it was so nasty and chemical ridden that I'm pretty sure I killed off a couple brain cells in the process, but I want to make sure that you don't do the same. So I created a little photo set and I'm going to kind of organize them into a fun little, hopefully witty story and pass it along to you. Well, in that same vein, and in the same vein as other stories that I've told you, apparently Michael, you know, recently moved to Seattle and decided that he needed a dentist, so he got some work done, and one of the things was he got a whitening treatment on his teeth. And the thing that he hadn't been told, he didn't really read, was that you can't drink coffee or espresso or tea for 2 weeks. Let me put this in perspective. This is a guy who owns the website ineedcoffee.com. He and I have traded blows over the amount of daily coffee intake that each one of us have. This is a guy who is chief among coffee connoisseurs, and he's taking espresso classes and things like that. You really need the article to actually get the depth of pain that he was going through here. But, you know, he found a way around it, and basically, you were not allowed, and unless you wanted to use a straw, you would not be allowed to. You should not drink coffee or tea after you have this, because basically it would restain the teeth that you just had whitened. So you really need to read how he got around it. I'm not going to spoil the story for you. However, what I did come to talk to you today here is something Michael and I are actually both working on. If you remember a little while ago, kind of as a one-off statement, when we were talking about the different caffeine diaries that he cooked up for over at ineedcoffee.com, I said, you know, we should have a show us your mug contest. Basically, have different coffee aficionados, different people who are in the caffeinated lifestyle, kind of just send a little picture of the mug that they use to drink coffee in, and just a little information about it, and we'd post them all up there. Just, you know, not necessarily that you even have a really interesting mug. I mean, it could be an I Love Daddy mug that your kid gave you. There's no problem with that. It's one of the ones I use in work. But, it's interesting to see believe it or not, even if the mug is a free one that you got from a vendor down the street or a coffee guy, you know, who just in passing, it's interesting story. It's a little bit of a conversation with the people around you, people who enjoy the same things. So Michael is putting it out there and allowing me to accept submissions. So what I'd like you to do, if you drink coffee, or even if you don't, hey, if you don't drink coffee, send me a picture of your teacup. Send me a picture of the bottle of water you use. Just anything that you got going on. Basically, his website, it thrives on that conversation. So what I'd like to see is people send in their coffee mugs and just a little bit of a blurb about how you got it. If you don't think your coffee mug is interesting, let me tell you one thing. There was a guy I used to work with who had the most boring plain coffee mug, and it was and the only reason I remembered it is because of the story. It was a squared off red coffee mug. It was like, you know, Santa red. That's what we're talking here. Like, and it was just this plain mug. And I said, oh, you know, that's a nice mug. It was, you know, not chipped at all, and it was in one of the archaeology firms I worked in. And I was like, oh, that's a nice mug. He's like, oh yeah, you know, it's nothing really special. And then he started telling me this story about how he got the mug. And while it might not be special to you, there's a certain level of interest that other people have in just other people's personal stories. It might be, you're like, oh, this is ridiculous. Nobody really cares about me. Nobody really cares about the things that I do. It's not that. It's the act of striking up the conversation is what everybody finds interesting. So I'd like to extend the conversation to everybody out there. I'd like to, you know, kind of broach new subjects here, kind of start the dialogue anew. So basically, it's a great way to get your name out there as a coffee drinker. It's a fun little thing. So you could send them to me at caffeination@gmail.com, and I will pass them along. And hopefully we'll get enough fun little stories, fun little things to talk about to submit for the March article. So we're going to put a little, it's like whenever you hear this, please feel free to send it in. But we're going to put kind of a deadline, like let's just say the 20th of February. That's when we're looking for submissions by. All right, maybe not the 20th. Let's just say the 22nd of February. And I'll just keep reminding people on upcoming shows, and we're going to kind of put it out there, just make sure everybody knows about it. So in case you're a little bit behind, hopefully it'll give you a couple little shows there to sink into the general consciousness, and we'll get the this information out there. So again, just please send a little email to me, caffeination@gmail.com. Include a picture of your coffee mug. Does not have to be a good one. Mine's actually a webcam shot of my coffee mug, and I'll actually post a fun little picture of mine. I'll post what I submitted to Michael. Basically, just a little story about it. You know, where you got it, what it is. Because believe it or not, when you actually look at a coffee mug, even if you don't have a favorite one, just the one that you end up using most of the time. There's always fun little stories about it. And I know I said, I was talking about my colleague from the archaeology firm. He said, basically, it was given to him by his grandfather, and it was because he was actually staying over his grandfather's house one time, and he wanted coffee, and he was like a little bit older, and so he drank the coffee from the mug, and his grandma said, you know what, you can take it home. It was a boring, plain red mug, but there was that attached to it. There was something else to it that you wouldn't really think is interesting, but not necessarily, but when you take a look back at it, that's how, you know, that's one of the ways he remembers his grandfather. His grandfather may or may not have been with us when he told me the story, but I would associate that mug with that man's grandfather every time after that. And there's just fun little stories. Like, my mug's actually from the Renaissance Fair at Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair, rather. It looks like a little castle. That's my favorite mug. I have a couple of them that I actually use, but that's just the one that I naturally gravitate towards, so... Just kind of fun, kind of thought I'd throw it out there, see what people think about it. If you check the show notes for episode 204, it's going to be the picture up at the top, so there you go. All right, and then the last little link we have here before we send you on your way, and of course this is another little rambling episode, roughly around the 45-minute mark, so hopefully you're enjoying this if you're a fan of the longer episodes. I don't know how many of you out there generally partake alcohol to excess from time to time, or you have in the past, but you always end up feeling pretty crappy the day afterwards. You always end up feeling a little bit dehydrated, a little deprived, and one of the things that many people don't know is that you're actually a little bit vitamin depleted at this point, because alcohol seems to attach to different vitamins within your body and actually flush them out of your system, which is good for certain things, bad for others. You know, good for having a good time, but bad for your health. So one of the things that has recently come out is something called vitamin beer. Apparently it's a way to replenish the chemicals that are being attached to the alcohol and being pulled out. Apparently the two main chemicals that are being pulled out of your body are niacin and the vitamin B. And basically the whole B series, the B complex, vitamin B2, 6, and 4, maybe, I don't even know, 12, 128, 19, whatever. But the B complex and niacin are apparently pulled out through alcohol. So there's a gentleman by the name of Billy LaLang that is actually a Filipino inventor. He's found a way to infuse vitamins into beer. Hopefully it tastes good. But he says he's calling it a prophylactic for drinkers. But basically what it does is it's already fortified with the vitamins that you're going to lose. So I just think it's a fantastic idea. Still in the concept stage, but if he wants somebody to actually test it out, and maybe not necessarily to drink it to excess all the time, but if you want somebody to drink it out, see exactly how it tastes, please feel free to send a bottle over to the Caffeination Podcast. We're more than willing to accept that kind of donation here. All right, so that's about enough. That's the caffeine and food section for you. That is the whole ball of wax. That is the entire shebang that we got going here for you here. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to this episode. This has been episode 204. I'm kind of lighthearted, a little bit late. Sorry about that, but I think we pulled through. I think everything's going pretty good here. So I'd like to just give you a little bit of a rundown again. Again, the Caffeination Podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. It's also over at techpodcasts.com that you can find all the other member shows who've agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. And it's also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts, kind of like Facebook for podcasts, actually, since MySpace seems to be on the way out. Gotta make the new reference, gotta stay hip to all you young kids lingo. Yeah, I know. All right, so again, last but most certainly not least, the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, please head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. All right, the ways to get into contact with this show are as follows, and I quote, you can either dial our listener line at 215-240-1319. You can email me at comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else you'd like to throw my direction at caffeination@gmail.com. You can Skype me at TheCaffeination, and pretty much all the other ways you can want to get into contact with me, including Messenger Pigeon, homing hamster, whatever you want, you can find them over at caffeination.com. Thanks for listening. Stay caffeinated.